Okay, welcome to the Cloud Native Show presented by Rackner. My name is Alex Rowell. I'm here with Tim Kelton, who's the co-founder of Descartes Labs. How are you today, Tim?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Thanks for agreeing to be part of the show. I really, really appreciate it. So let's start with Descartes Labs. So what do you do? What is the company and the business doing?
Yeah, so we are in the... Our main focus is trying to understand how changes happening on the earth might impact our customers, their businesses, their supply chains, all of those types of areas, and building models to help see that and predict that for them.
Right. And what's your background? You worked as a researcher in this field, if I'm not incorrect. How did you get to found Descartes?
Yeah, the company is maybe not quite the stereotypical startup story. Myself and the rest of a lot of the founding team, we were scientists, researchers, and engineers in New Mexico, up in the mountains at Los Alamos National Laboratory. Mm-hmm. And so there we worked on, it's a really wide range multidisciplinary laboratory, but one of the big projects we worked on for a number of years, I think the project started in 2008, was applying machine learning to all different types of government problems. And among them was this area of remotely sensing and measuring the Earth. So most commonly people think of things like satellite images. So we founded the company in 2014. So our headquarters is up in the mountains of Santa Fe, New Mexico. We now have grown, you know, I think we're a little over 120 employees now. And we have offices in San Francisco and New York. But the headquarters is still up there in the mountains where you can, you know, go ski in the morning before work or kind of have that interesting work-life balance. It's been a fun ride.
Very cool. So a little bit about the actual use cases. So what sort of customers are you providing this data to? What's some of the a couple potential use cases that people would want your company to assist them with?
Yeah, it's really getting pretty broad. And that's the exciting thing is to see how many different applications there are. But you can start by kind of thinking around the physical world and what types of companies have infrastructure or supply chains or commodities as inputs to their business model. Mm-hmm. And then go from there. This ranges from agriculture. We've done a lot with, you know, mapping out things like crops and, you know, how much food is being grown in various parts of the world, all different types of energy, things like solar, wind, gas, all of those types of areas. And then now we even announced just last week a really interesting initiative around monitoring things like methane and how methane it's going into the atmosphere. So it's pretty neat. One of the things we take away from coming out of like a national research laboratory is this core foundation on science and applying large amounts of data that's just increasingly being gathered from all these sensors, both, you know, orbiting the Earth and on ground, and being able to fuse them together to you know, customize and give an answer that, you know, what's happening in these areas and how that might impact our customers and what they're looking at going forward.
Right. Very cool. So let's talk about that. So, you know, this is the Cloud Native Show. Obviously, we're here to talk about cloud services. Mm-hmm. When I hear, you know, the massive volumes of data you guys are working with, you know, obviously ingest is a problem, processing is a problem. Why is the cloud important, or why are cloud services important to the company? I believe it was founded in 2014? So it was a few years ago. And how have you sort of used those to fulfill that use case?
Well, prior to founding the company, you know, if you go back into look at a lot of the research that was being done in things like machine learning, 10 years ago, you actually kind of needed to be someplace like Los Alamos where you had access to big high-performance supercomputers at your disposal. Because cloud 10 years ago, when I first started using, you know, Amazon, it was EC2 and S3, and that was about it. You know, there really wasn't too much else there. And so cloud's kind of been at the center of of our whole infrastructure. When we started in 2014, we started basically with no servers at all. And we still to this day don't have a server. So everything we've done has been on basically the three kind of big hyperscale cloud vendors. And so we built everything completely native from the ground up, which is pretty nice to be able to optimize for speed of development and bringing out new features as quickly as you can. And you just avoid, you know, all the pitfalls of managing data centers and scaling up, you know, the networks and buying and racking servers and all of those types of things, which everyone knows really well how challenging that is.
Right. So, you know, high level, obviously we don't need to get into the weeds of it, but what are the, you know, major areas or sort of segments where you're using these technologies? So I would assume you are keeping ingest separate from sort of the delivering of data to your customers, but how generally do you map it out in terms of your infrastructure?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a number of teams in the company. We have a core team of scientists that have backgrounds in things like machine learning and remote sensing. And so they're on the kind of front end hitting the APIs we build. On the back end, we're ingesting and normalizing together anywhere from 10 to 100 terabytes a day of imagery and really all different types of sensor data. I shouldn't just say imagery, but that's one of the bigger ones, obviously. And so we have a core team that's focused on that ingest, and then we have an engineering team that's focused on all of these APIs and services, and those kind of all follow a microservices pattern, so we can quickly iterate on various components of that and, you know, deploy many times a day out to those areas. But the ingest, the real goal there behind it is to optimize for our machine learning scientists' time and basically be able to promote as rapid as possible iteration and experimentation. And we don't want them to have to learn a brand new API for every single sensor that comes online, because they basically come, there's something new every day. And so we want them to have the ability to pick and basically fuse together all the right data sets they need to solve those problems. So it can be different. Like just to give you an example, it's maybe not, people think of satellite imagery as, you know, Google Earth and beautiful pictures of the Earth and, you know, human visible red, green, and blue. But actually we capture lots of different wavelengths, things like moisture, thermal, infrared, things like that. You have different modalities of data coming in. So you can see things like there's sensors that just collect things like radio frequencies. Other sensors like synthetic aperture radar send a radar signal and bounce it off the Earth and then collect it on another orbit. So they measure like the height of the Earth in a very primitive form. So each of those ingest pipelines are incredibly distinct. And so you have to be able to scale those and come up with a common platform. And then our APIs just serve that in as easy to use way. And we just didn't really have any options. There wasn't a real good way to do that before. And one of the other big challenges is you think about these types of data sets. Every day we'll have a new customer come to us with a new problem, and we won't necessarily know what geographic region, we won't necessarily know what window of time they're interested in looking at. And that just varies from domain to domain. If it's cornfields in Iowa, the last 15 years might be good. If it's, you know, solar fields being deployed in Nevada or in the Middle East, you're looking at totally different types of things. Maybe you're measuring things for floods or weather events. All of these are different. So no matter what problem domain comes in, we want to be able to have a really quick and rapid experimentation cycle. And so that's what the ingest, the real goal is, to normalize that and make that as easy as possible.
Right. And then on the ML side, are you, you know, or have you built something in-house to sort of support that? Or are you using, you know, your normal open source ML stuff, or I guess some combination of both?
Yeah, definitely a combination of both. I mean, we leverage heavily the open source community. That's an amazing part of why a company like ours can get started today. And that's also, you know, some of the gaps we see are especially around the geospatial and remote sensing data sets. That's where a lot of times we have to spend our time building those tools. But we leverage heavily, and even our APIs really kind of mimic some of the patterns you see in the Python, especially in the Python community, like NumPy and the NumPy array. That's kind of like a first-class citizen in our APIs. But NumPy, SciPy, scikit-learn, TensorFlow, Keras, all of those types of tools are just part of our daily toolbox. But then when you get into some of these data sets, things like synthetic aperture radar or measuring the vegetative health in plants, that's where it's a combination of some of these open source tools plus some of the APIs and tools we built.
Awesome. And then on the platform side, I think you're very visible users of Kubernetes and Istio and sort of the service mesh pattern. Why was that choice made, and how has it sort of helped you as far as delivering these capabilities to customers?
Yeah, so I think for me, this goes back, I've been using, I'm probably dating myself here, but I first kind of got exposed to things like containers with actually Solaris Zones back in the day. And then I had worked some during my time at Los Alamos with C groups and namespaces a bit pre-Docker. And so things like Mesos, we did some experiments on using that and some of our work there. And so when Kubernetes came out, I had read some of the papers from, the Borg and Omega papers from Google, and I was like, this is exactly what, at least I personally was looking for. It solved a lot of the problems with distributed systems. So we started using Kubernetes almost from maybe day one or week one of the company, so late 2014 already.
It's pretty early Kubernetes.
Yeah. And this whole, it's been very exciting to see all of this change. You know, I think I remember going to, was it the Cloud Native? Maybe it was called the Summit, just on this side. It was just this kind of side day on the side of the Linux Foundation in Toronto in 2016. And that's what I think KubeCon kind of came out of all of those things. And you go to KubeCon last year and it's, 6,000 people.
It's crazy.
And it's kind of industry standard. So it's kind of evolved very, very quickly, which has been exciting. And the tooling has evolved with that. So there's, it solves a lot of problems, but it also makes a lot of new challenges when you distribute the workloads around. So it's pretty exciting to see patterns like service meshes and things like that around trying to troubleshoot the latency and the networking challenges when you start distributing all these workloads all over the place with microservices. We've used both of those quite a bit. All our infrastructure is basically on Kubernetes, and all our APIs are inside of it. We use Istio quite heavily.
Right. So I think that gives us a good baseline of where you are today. What's something, if you look at the next 12 to 24 months, what's something new within Descartes that you're interested in or excited to get out as far as, capabilities?
I think we're, there's a lot of organizations maybe in similar spots to where we are, and even more that once they start applying machine learning, we have machine learning models that we've now been running in production for customers for many years. Right. That creates a whole new set of challenges. In some ways, there's I guess a term a lot of people are starting to use called ML ops. And right. that's some of the same challenges you see that you had from a software engineering perspective with DevOps over the years. How do you follow the pattern of this model and how it was changed and iterated on all through its life cycle? And then how do you publish that? So those are definitely areas, we've seen we're investing a lot in our time in that, especially as we have more and more models and we're scaling out those areas of the company. And I think that's only going to grow for as more and more companies adopt machine learning. But just like the machine learning ecosystem has evolved really dramatically with tools like TensorFlow, for example, 4 years ago, that was just released. And now look at how mature that is and how widely that's used. Mm-hmm. I think that's where you see a lot of innovation. And there's already a lot of effort going in from the open source side and also from the commercial side.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that actually leads well. I always like to end each show with a question to my guests about what's something more broadly that they're excited about in technology. We may have gotten into that a little bit with the AI ops thing, but if your answer isn't exactly the same, I'd love to hear what you think.
Well, on a personal in some ways, it's the same in that there's this explosion of sensors happening everywhere around us. Right. From the data set side, on a personal level, I also am very excited about the explosion of sensors that I can use for things like, you know, I love to ride my mountain bike. And so it's pretty exciting to be able to fuse together all these different data sets and be able to build my own little models on, you know, track your fitness, you know, but you can even have like kind of an infrared sensor looking at your blood thickness levels and oxygenation of your blood and these types of things. It's really amazing what's going on all those levels. But in some ways, that's the exact same as what we're seeing. It's just from Descartes' side, as far as measuring the earth, it's the same sort of explosion of sensors. But on a personal level, it's very fun to fuse those together and have your little pet projects on the weekends that you can kind of use some of the same tools.
Right. What would you say is the most interesting use case you've seen that you can talk about for Descartes?
Yeah, it's so, I think like myself, it's been really just exciting to see how tools we built with one use case in mind were, you know, to say, start building models for how much corn was produced across the US, and then be able to see how a little bit of variations on those tools, we can then start looking at you know, oil fracking pads in the Permian Basin and how they evolve through time, and being able to use those same tools to completely different business verticals. That's been something that I wouldn't have guessed was originally when we were starting, that there was just going to be so much overlap, and you're starting to see more and more use cases as more and more data sets come online. So that's been really exciting.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much again, Tim. This was great having you on. I thought this is a really, really cool use case that I definitely haven't highlighted anything like this before on the show. So thank you for stopping by, and really excited to get this one out to everyone.
Great. Well, it was my pleasure, Alex.